Hey, whether you enjoy listening to Breaking Down Collapse or Building Up Resilience, I think you'll also really enjoy our bonus content on Patreon.
Yeah, Kellen and I take 20 minutes each week to talk about the news that's happening all around us and Collapse as it plays out. We like to have a little fun with it, but also make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world of Collapse.
We look forward to having you join us there. The link to join us on Patreon is in the episode description.
Kellen and I have long said that the economy is a reflection of the state of collapse. Now, in some ways, that assumption is pushed to its limit because the economy can be faked, right? It is a man-made idea, and there are levers and artificial padding that can be inserted to make things look different than they actually are. I believe that the economy is currently being propped up by many of these things. If the economy was a true reflection of the state of collapse, then the economy would be in absolute shambles. That said, we do see ebbs and flows and stresses in the economy that even all of those levers, all of that artificial padding, cannot cover, cannot fix. And the only thing that is left for a government to do in order to make the economy look better than it actually is to simply straight up lie about it or give incorrect information, whether purposefully or not. Now, the BLS here in the U.S. is an organization that puts out numbers basically estimating the health of the economy from a labor perspective, so the growth or decrease in jobs. BLS stands for Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, they will report on how many jobs we've grown by over a certain period, and then they will do an adjustment. They'll go back, they'll kind of relook at the numbers, and over time, they give an adjusted number. Well, just recently, here the last couple of weeks, the BLS has put out a number saying that total growth in non-farm payrolls, and they look at jobs based on different segments of the labor sector. Not sure why non-farm is important, but they said that there was an actual drop of 911,000 from the initial estimate. So they way overestimated the number of jobs that were created for the year prior to March 2025. Now, they're saying that this amount, this adjustment, was over 50% higher than last year's adjustment, and it's the largest adjustment on record going back all the way to 2002, which, you know, we've had several times where there have been massive amounts of job loss, 2008, 2009, 2020. Basically, what they're saying is our numbers have never been so wrong. Our guess has never been so wrong as it, since 2002. Now, there's two things to take from this, I guess two main things. The first is the economy is worse than what they were reporting based on the jobs numbers, right? I think this is something that we have known. We've seen people talking about it. There's been a lot of conversations and concern around jobs. The number of posts people make on sites like LinkedIn being open for work, which, by the way, LinkedIn is a cesspool. I hate it there, but I have to use it for work. So I do get to see, kind of what goes on there. And we see all this anecdotal evidence from friends or family or LinkedIn or wherever it might be, social media, of people saying, you know, I've lost my job or seeing concerns that layoffs are happening. And it's really hard to know without seeing official numbers whether that anecdotal evidence is sort of random, if it's hyperbole. And then it's when reports like this come out that we can actually see the full picture. Now, the scary thing is the BLS in the U.S. has recently seen a change in management, I guess, because Donald Trump has been firing. He fired the previous leader because he didn't like the numbers. Donald Trump was also previously asked just a couple of weeks ago, you know, how he was going to react to the next jobs report coming out and if he felt that the numbers were trustworthy. And he said, well, that will depend on what the numbers are. He's straight up basically just telling us, if I'm not happy with the numbers, I don't trust them and I don't trust the person giving them. and I will fire them until someone gives me the numbers that I want to hear. That is a terrifying prospect, and it's not just true of the BLS. It's also true of other sectors of both the economic statistics organizations, the organizations that pull the levers, and also for things outside of economics, like climate change and other items. Jerome Powell, you know, head of the Fed, has been under constant pressure and attack from Donald Trump, saying that he should be immediately cutting interest rates, that he's taking too long, that it's, you know, he's just doing it because he's politicized, and Trump is threatening to fire him, even though Trump has no right to fire him, no authority to do that. So I had mentioned there was two things to kind of view from this. The first was that economic data is worse than we had thought, or at least worse than what had been said. And second, that the data itself is in danger. It's under attack. I fear that we already are, and even more so over time we will be, living in a time when we will be completely unable to trust the numbers that we are hearing. That harkens to me like North Korea-type propaganda, you know, just a control the data output and therefore a complete ignorance of from people when it comes to the actual state of things. Another interesting thing I think we can pull from this is that it mentions that much of this data, this revised data, goes all the way back to early 2024, well before Donald Trump became president and, you know, all the concerns that comes with the economy once he did. Much of these revised numbers come from the Joe Biden era and show that the economy was already weakening towards the end of his presidency. You add in then Donald Trump and tariffs and all of the issues that come from that. You add in the federal employees who lost their jobs. I'm not sure of the date when, you know, all those federal employees who were offered a severance if they left by a certain date. I know that date was approaching, and we're talking like tens, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs on the federal side of things that were going to be lost as well. This article that I'm reading from specifically is a CNBC.com article from September 9th. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it here. It says, "Moreover, the numbers announced Tuesday will face further revisions when the BLS releases the final benchmark figure in February 2026. For the previous benchmark revision, which encompassed the 12 months prior to March 2024, the initial total was 818,000 fewer jobs, later adjusted in February 2025 to 598,000. Still the largest downward move since 2009. As a share of the 171 million member labor force, the revisions amount to 0.6%. However, the political and economic ramifications could be considerable. Additional signs of labor market weakness will add to the case that Trump has been pressing the four Federal Reserve interest rate cuts." The White House statement added that Fed Chair Jerome Powell has officially run out of excuses and must cut rates now. So yeah, it's interesting. This adds more pressure to him. There is he's expected to cut rates on the 17th. So that's just coming up right around the corner. And I think the markets have baked in an expected rate cut there of at least 0.25%, if not a half a percent. And so if he doesn't do that, it could spell issues for the markets. Now, what's interesting is that we've also hit this point in the economy where the levers aren't really the normal levers that they pull cannot be pulled, right? Because we're in a bit of a stagflationary moment. Typically, when we're in a sort of deflationary movement, well, they can try and stimulate the economy by lowering interest rates, getting people to go out and purchase. Typically in a deflationary, you know, economy, also that means that that inflation number is well below the 2% target rate that the Fed has set. The problem is we're in an inflationary moment in which we're at nearly 3% inflation year over year. So, you know, 50% above what they want us to be at for the target. But we're also seeing job loss and a decrease in spending, which you would typically see in a recession. So if they were to try to stimulate the economy by lowering interest rates, it's going to increase inflation even more, which is something that we've been battling over the last several years. So Jerome Powell is waiting, and probably wisely, to ensure that we don't experience super high rates of inflation, which of course, you know, is going to make groceries increase in cost, even though wages don't keep up. It's going to make all sorts of things increase in cost. And so the Fed is trying to hit the timing right with those levers to make sure that they can ease inflation downward while also stimulating the economy. It is a very, I think, difficult thing to do. And at some point, it does become completely uncoupled. And we don't know if that's what's happening here, if that's what's going to happen. But what we do know is that the pressure being put on from the White House and from the markets to expect these rate cuts could end up working out. We might have the soft landing that they have been searching for, or we could end up, you know, having this really miserable economy where inflation increases, but we head into a recession or a depression in which we can't get ourselves out of. Going back to my earlier statement about the economy being a reflection of the state of collapse, we've got primary, we've got secondary, we've got tertiary forms of wealth, which basically is the pathway leading us from natural resources to economic output. If you need a refresher on that, go back and listen to the episode that we did on the financial system. That was episode 6. But I think a lot of people, when they think of collapse, they don't necessarily tie the outcome of collapse to economic issues. They think maybe more about, okay, one day there's food and then one day there's no food. Or one day there's access to water and then the next there's no access to water. But what it really becomes is that one day food is affordable, right? The next day it's slightly less affordable. And the day after that, a little bit more so. And over time, over months and months or years and years, suddenly food is not affordable. And what is that telling us? Basically, it's telling us, hey, we're running out of the natural resources, or maybe the supply chain itself is failing, or we're simply not able to produce the income required to purchase it. But the food, you know, demand is higher than the food supply in a given area. And that, to me, is collapse. It's not that one day the grocery stores are full and the next day the grocery stores are empty. Now, that's a possibility, right? We saw it during COVID. People can panic buy. But even that becomes another economic issue. It's an issue of, prices rising because there are suddenly more people that want food than can get it. And the people who hoarded the food are selling, you know, they're price gouging and selling the food for more than what the average person can pay. We're seeing with inflation that the prices of groceries, as an example, just because we're talking about food, the prices of groceries increase, and yet the wages required to purchase those groceries do not increase. I'll do an episode here in the next week or two on water availability, because we're seeing some new research coming out around water availability. The one I saw specifically was in the U.S., but I'll try and share one from the U.S. and one globally. But water availability is decreasing. It's becoming harder to come by in the U.S. And this is, again, a question of economics. If you look at, you know, if you listen to our episodes that we did on infrastructure, water in the U.S. is not becoming as available as previously, or right, it's kind of a weird way to put it, but it's becoming less available because access to and maintenance of the infrastructure that carries water is degrading. Governments and organizations are simply not putting the money into it that needs to be put into it to maintain or upkeep it. That money is going somewhere else. There's only so much money to go around. Budgets are shrinking, and this is due to economic issues, or it manifests itself through economic issues. And we view it, again, through the lens of catabolic collapse. All right, that's all for this week. Here's to hoping that we're going to be able to trust the numbers in the future. And if we can't trust the numbers, that hopefully there is at least some way, unofficially, to have a grasp of what's going on and to be able to see the indicators that might tell us we need to be preparing for economic hard times, which, if you've been paying attention up to this point, I think it's pretty apparent that we're heading into those times currently. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.